I know a lot of attorneys that work from home all hours of the night and everything like that. If you're relying on username and password to protect your law firm, that's a ticking time bomb for getting hacked. Turn on MFA. You've got to keep track of new threat intelligence and respond accordingly. And the skilled security team is what buttons all of that up.
You're listening to the Legal Mastermind Podcast with your hosts, Ryan Klein and Chase Williams, the go-to podcast for learning from the experts in the legal community about effective ways to grow and manage your law firm.
Today on the Legal Mastermind Podcast, we have Tom Kirkham, the CEO of Iron Tech Security. Welcome to the Legal Mastermind Podcast.
Good to be here.
Great. So Tom, today we're going to talk about five recommendations to protect your firm from cyber attacks. And we know that Iron Tech is an expert in the cybersecurity space, but this actually comes directly from the White House. So I guess starting off, like to kind of give our listeners a background, what are some cyber attacks that you've seen specifically interfere with, you know, businesses that you've worked with?
Well, the number one concern that everyone has, and it's everyone, it doesn't matter if you're a solo attorney, you know, single attorney law firm, or if you have 500 attorneys in your firm, every single person has to worry about ransomware and extortionware, because most ransomware attacks these days have an extortionware component. So if you think a backup is going to save the day, you know, you restore all the encrypted files from backup, they've added the extortionware component to where if you don't pay the ransom, they release the information publicly or they sell it to the highest bidder. So if you are personal injury, you've got personal health information, PHI, that other criminals and hackers can use for identity theft. If you're an intellectual property or patent attorney, the Chinese would be very interested in that information. They've been stealing a lot of intellectual property over the past 10 or 20 years. In fact, some experts say it's the greatest transfer of wealth in human history. And if you look at how modern Shanghai is and a couple of other cities in China, they're more modern than any city in Western democracy. So it's easy to see that that is the case. I mean, they're very advanced and they've done that a great deal through stealing intellectual property.
Is it a situation where these attackers, they have this ransom up for whatever kind of data that they've captured? In your experience, is it something where someone pays the fine or whatever they're demanding and then they just call it a day? Or is it like a code they live by? Or is it something where it's like, you're going to pay one time and they're going to say, actually, we want more money?
Well, it varies somewhat, but you have to remember that when you're talking about the criminal ransomware attacks, it's all about the money. They're doing it at scale, volume, automation, bots. And so they may just start with a list of all the members of the New York State Bar Association. And let's just say there's 100,000. I don't know how many there is, but they do it at volume and they don't care and they don't know if you're a solo attorney or a member of a firm with 100 attorneys. So they engage with other vertically specialized hackers to supply help desk. So if you've got trouble unencrypting the files after you pay the ransom, they'll assist with you obtaining the payments, all sorts of good customer service, right? Because the model doesn't work for the criminal ransomware attackers unless they unencrypt the files. So when it comes down to whether you're going to pay the ransom or not, that's up to the firm. You know, maybe you have a backup, but now you've got the extortionware component. Maybe you refuse to pay it under any circumstances, and there's a case to be made for that, especially if it's going to sanctioned individuals or nation states like North Korea, Russia. It's against the law for Americans to send money to those entities. At the end of the day, an individual ransomware attack is really up to the firm. I do not pass any kind of moral judgment on if I had a client that's had a ransomware attack. I don't pass any moral judgment on them because to my mind, it is a business decision. If you don't have backups or you're worried about the extortionware, you've got to factor that in, you know, regardless of where the money is going to go. I've never seen the feds prosecute a case because ransomware was paid to a sanctioned entity, but that might change. I just can't imagine them fining a victim, but it's all across the board. And those decisions are all individuals. I've seen people just pay it up and their files are unencrypted and they go about their business. But once you become a victim of a ransomware attack, if you don't make changes to prevent that, you're marked, you're a patsy, and it's likely that you're going to have another one. So I think it's best to put the proper defense in place. You know, you've got a 99.999% chance that it cannot happen to you if you do the right defenses, you know, the five things.
So before going into the five defenses, I'm assuming that bar associations and other governing bodies will not sympathize with law firms should there be a hacker attack and the dissemination of sensitive information.
Right. So you've got the whole rules of professional conduct, you know, 1.1, 1.6 specifically talks about your ethical responsibilities surrounding the accidental or any type of divulging client data, even if it's a breach or not. And so one of the things that especially, well, 1.1 and 1.6, and this is for all bar associations, by the way, I haven't seen one yet that didn't have these clauses in their American Bar Association, that you have to make reasonable efforts to protect your client data, especially if you're handling health information, medical information, patent information, and things like that. And they use the phrase reasonable efforts. In my opinion, the White House opinion, reasonable efforts are not only having an antivirus. Antivirus does not protect a law firm from ransomware attacks. It may catch a few, but nation state offensive cyber weapons have been obtained. Our own NSA has been hacked, and their hacking tools are available to download for free on the dark web by criminals and other nation states to be used. So the technical defenses like antivirus are simply not adequate against nation state offensive cyber weapons. It's not detectable.
So let's move into the five defenses. Is that what you're calling it, the five defenses, or are you calling it the five?
Well, we just call it the five things, right? Because they're all defensive, but some of them are procedures, policies, and specialized vendors the White House is recommending that you have in place all the time, not after the fact. You know, a lot of people, I'm always amazed whenever I attend trade shows and conferences, and if there's an FBI agent there speaking about cybersecurity, I'm always amazed that they get a higher attendance than I do, because they think that the FBI knows everything about how to protect your firm. But in reality, they're an after-the-fact organization. I've even heard FBI agents fess up that they've been hacked. But the main thing is the White House is saying, and we've always said, that you've got to think defensively and you've got to put the five things in place. And if you do those five things, it's very unlikely you'll have a successful attack, not just ransomware, but any type of hacking attempt. It's about the criminals are going to go to the low-hanging fruit. You know, when they send out those 100,000 emails, and email is the primary distribution of ransomware attacks and others as well, but email is really the big one. If they only get 1% out of the 100,000 emails convert, you know, they think in terms of numbers, conversion rates, and all of that. Well, that's 1,000 victims. If the average ransom is $10,000, you know, that's another thing that people don't realize is that they see the Colonial Pipelines, they see the JBS meat supply company getting hacked and these $4, $5, $15 million ransomware demands. But the vast majority of ransomware attacks are in the $5, $10, $20,000 range. And those ransoms are calculated on the fly. There's not somebody there looking, you know, if you become a victim, they still don't know or care who you are unless it's a big place. And so at that 1% conversion rate, a $10,000 average ransom is $10 million net revenue to the criminals. And it's all automated.
What are these emails look like?
That's a good question. So the true skill of a ransomware attacker is psychological manipulation, social engineering, but it's really just a con job. Very typically, they will pick a vendor. So they will send an email, something to the effect of, you've got outstanding bills. We're going to shut off access to whatever the resource is if you don't get these bills, and attached is an Excel spreadsheet. So bookkeeping or someone in the office will get that and they go, I know I paid those bills. Let me see what they're saying. They open up the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet contains a malicious macro, and then that macro automatically calls the Windows disk encryption service and begins encrypting the files. Nowhere in there is a virus for an antivirus to detect. So that's the typical payload. Now we're seeing a growth rate in compromised websites doing what's known as a drive-by download. And so you go to a compromised website, it could be anybody. As soon as you visit the site, it downloads the components to fire off the attack. The deal about it not having a virus is the key component to a ransomware and why antivirus is not effective. Antivirus uses signature file, signature definition file. So every time a new virus is discovered, they have to update the signature file. Those signature files are very commonly out of date. Some vendors, for a particular virus, it may take them 6 months to get an update for that virus. And the next time it's a day. And no one antivirus vendor is better than the other. You know, some people will be using Norton and then they install McAfee and McAfee found stuff that Norton didn't find. Well, it's real easy to think that, well, McAfee must be better than Norton. It's kind of a fallacy, but if they had reversed it, they would find the same thing is true. So the better way to detect and stop and quarantine these attacks, ransomware or otherwise, is to use artificial intelligence, machine learning, a neural net, if you will, to look at the actual behavior of the user and the computer. Because using products that have a neural net, they don't need signatures. They're looking at what's running on the computer, and is this typical of a ransomware attack? And it freezes and locks it up as soon as it tries to call the encryption service.
Are programs or tools that utilize AI and neural nets in that form of learning, is that like one of the things, or are those like a couple of the steps?
Well, that particular class of product is, it goes by a lot of different names. I'm old school, so I call it an EDR. It's endpoint detection and response. It's a class of product. And in actuality, it's managed endpoint detect and response. And that means you've got both the technical control, the technical defensive control that uses a neural net and predictive behavior based upon what it's learned and what it constantly learns to look for behavior that's suspicious. And then it notifies InfoSec professionals in a security operations center to do more research. Because even if the attack is thwarted by the EDR or MDR, managed EDR, it still needs to be investigated, because ransomware attacks always have additional payloads, server backdoors, keyloggers, on and on and on. And then when the ransomware attack is over, they go on the dark web and sell a list of servers that have backdoors installed. They sell a list of workstations that have keyloggers to other criminals that specialize in exploiting those vulnerabilities.
There really is just a network of people out there that are specialized. You really don't ever hear about this in the news. It's just, you know, one collective group, but it sounds like it's really, and then once you're vulnerable, there's multiple opportunities for different types of hacks to occur. And especially if you have a large employee base, it sounds, but the key logging, that's, I'm pretty familiar with what it is, but if you want to explain it to the listeners, because it's pretty intense, I think.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Because I forget, I use these terminologies and sometimes I forget. Keylogger, it's basically, it logs your keystrokes. So they just mine the keylogger files for username and passwords to any website, maybe any application that they use. So that gives criminals access to email, bank accounts, all sorts of different things. And you've got to remember that We have never brought on a new client that has had a successful ransomware attack, and some of them have had more than one, that when we put our tools on, we did not discover server backdoors and keyloggers and other malicious exploits on the network that was dropped in there during the initial ransomware attack. And sometimes those aren't activated for months or even years. You know, it may take the Chinese a while to find a, to exploit a server backdoor on an IP attorney or an IP firm.
So out of curiosity too, there might be some people listening and saying like, if I give them like five, I don't want to do all this stuff. It sounds like a lot. I'll just give them like the $5,000 and maybe they'll be on their way and they won't leave me alone anymore. Or a lot of times you have to do these transactions using cryptocurrency. And so if they do want to pay the ransomware, they would actually have to go and start setting up wallets and all that jazz. Is that the truth there?
Bitcoin took a lot of the friction out of payments, but a lot of people don't realize that ransomware was around 10 years before Bitcoin was ever invented. So before Bitcoin, they would tell them to go get one of these, these cards that you can get from Walmart that you can transfer cash to other people. And that's a lot more friction in that transaction. But if you've got 5 days to pay a ransom and you've never bought Bitcoin before, you've got a time problem. The best thing to do is to make sure it doesn't happen to you in the first place. The EDR tools, there's a couple of them that are awesome. You can't buy them off the shelf. You have to get them from professionals, either InfoSec professionals or IT professionals, because it needs to be managed. You've got to have InfoSec professionals managing the alerts and mitigation, remediation of security anomalies to look for other things that have been planted on the network. But Bitcoin changed it. That's when they really became volume then. You're talking about, you know, how most people don't realize how big the bad or the black hat hacking community is. If I were a ransomware attacker, you know, I've got the skills to psychologically manipulate people or con them or scam them, whatever you want to call it. And it's no different than a street scam, except instead of it being one-to-one, it's one to many. It's 1 to 1,000 instead of one-on-one street cons. So that psychological manipulation is my specialty if I were to do that. But I've subbed out the encryption server to groups that do nothing but provide clean, whitelisted servers that aren't known to do the handshaking for the encryption stuff. I've got to have a clean email server to blast out the emails. So I get that from another criminal group. I've got the, like I said earlier, I've got the 1-800 help desk group that's sitting there manning the phones, ready to help the victim. I probably used a kit. There's groups out there that create ransomware software construction kits. So it's point and click. I mean, the criminal groups create a piece of software that the criminal will use to build the whole ransomware attack. This is my mail server. This is my encryption server. This is my message. And here's my mailing list. And you hit send.
I imagine that software is not off the shelf either.
Well, it is on dark web. Yeah, web is a whole nother part of the internet that you really can't see. You've got to use a special browser, a Tor browser that uses encryption traffic, and it's all untraceable. And that's where all the bad stuff is. That's the dark alleys of the world for the hacker community. They communicate. They've got forums. It's a very, you know, they know people that do this. It's really a fascinating world. And the vast majority of people really, that's when I get frustrated listening to FBI. I've never heard one do a really good job of explaining to everyone how truly large the hacking, the black hat, the bad guys community is. And it's at scale. I can't, you know, it's like, well, I'm in the middle of Montana and I'm a single law practice. Why would anybody want to hack me? It's not targeted. It's done at volume. And if your email shows up in a list, it's going to be along with all the other emails. And you could easily become a victim. You know, the Colonial Pipeline hack, they had no idea they were hacking a petroleum delivery infrastructure company. All they knew, it was a targeted attack. All they knew is someone had detected a legacy virtual private network connection that was not protected by multi-factor authentication. You know, it didn't require a third piece of identification, username, password, and then a randomly generated number. You know, many of you probably know what I'm talking about. You know, your bank account uses it. You can actually use it on your Amazon account, Facebook, and on and on. But all those hackers knew is it was a big target. So they issued the ransom demand of $4.4 million, and then it hit the news. You know, it's on CNN, New York Times, Washington Post. They apologized for interrupting petroleum distribution on the East Coast because they had no idea who they were attacking. They just knew it was a big target.
For our listeners, what's something they could do today besides hiring you that would protect them?
If you look at the five things that the White House says, Anne Neuberger, the acting director, she's the one that talks to the president. This is what's happening now, and this is what we think will happen in the future. She iterated five things. EDR, that class of products she specified. If you want to know the ones that I would recommend, it would be SentinelOne and CrowdStrike. Those are best in breed. They're the best in the world at what they do. She says you've got to have a skilled security team in place, not after the fact. Things that don't smell right, anomalies, have to be investigated. And sometimes EDRs don't work and they require professionals. She says you've got to turn on multi-factor authentication and use it everywhere you can because username and passwords are frequently compromised. Over 90% of the people reuse credentials, even though 60% of them know they shouldn't do it. So if you get your Facebook credentials cracked and it's the same that you use for email, Facebook, then those accounts can be cracked. Well, they don't even need to be cracked. They're just vulnerable, period. Just waiting on somebody to log in. Another one that the White House says is you've got to incorporate new threat intelligence into your defenses. We're very worried about the Ukrainian situation. In fact, I'm personally surprised we haven't seen broad cyber attacks on the United States, and it could still happen. I thought it would have already happened. We've been getting warnings the whole time, so they've been right pretty much all along. And then finally, the White House says you've got to have your own stuff encrypted because you don't know if somebody's going to steal a laptop or you're going to lose the laptop or a smartphone or somebody steals your servers. And then as you replace equipment, if you're just sending them out to be recycled or you're giving them away to somebody, that disk data has to be encrypted. So wherever those hard drives fall, they don't end up in hackers that do nothing but mine old hard drives for data and then selling it to the highest bidder. I know a lot of attorneys that work from home, like probably all of them do, all hours of the night and everything like that. If you're relying on username and password to protect your law firm, that's a ticking time bomb for getting hacked. Turn on MFA. You've got to keep track of new threat intelligence and respond accordingly. And the skilled security team is what buttons all of that up.
So Tom, thank you so much for your time today. For our listeners that want to possibly work with IronTech or have additional questions, what's the best way to reach out?
Just go to the website, irontechsecurity.com. There are scads and scads of educational videos, plenty of contact forms, but just look into our resources. If you want to learn more, you want to go down the rabbit hole, that's the best place to start.
Thanks for listening to the Legal Mastermind podcast. If you're interested in working with Ryan and Chase, please email mastermind@marketmymarket.com. Make sure to join the free mastermind group for growing and managing your firm at lawfirmmastermind.com. Ryan Klein and Chase Williams are the managing partners at Market My Market, one of the top legal marketing companies in the United States.